Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The White House rolled out its health care reform proposal yesterday after a year of letting Congress take the lead. The president's big new item? Power for the federal government to block excessive health insurance rate hikes. That, says President Obama, after insurers in California, Kansas, Maine, and Michigan have proposed rate hikes up toward a shocking 40% or higher. Republicans preparing for a much-hyped health care summit on Thursday say it's all bad. Democrats say this may be the last chance for decades. This hour, On Point, last call for health care reform and a look at what happens if nothing happens. You can join the conversation. Are you ready to rise to this again? Do you know what your rate hikes might be this year without it? With unemployment near 10%, do you even have health insurance? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me first today from Washington for a look at the president's proposal and the way ahead is Julie Rovner, health policy correspondent for NPR. Julie, great to have you back.
Nice to be here.
Give us the lay of the land this week, Julie. We had the rollout of the White House proposal yesterday. What's coming?
Well, what's coming, of course, is this big, as you mentioned, hyped bipartisan summit on Thursday. It's going to be an all-day affair. We think from starts at 10, should go until about 4 o'clock, where basically everybody gets to have their say. Now, the president said in his internet address over the weekend he wanted to not be political theater, but it's hard to see how it can be anything but. This is the president, of course, now has laid out his plan, which is pretty similar to the plan. It's based on the plan that passed the Senate. Mm-hmm. In December with some changes, most of them changes that were already being negotiated between House and Senate Democrats and of mm-hmm. course, this new federal board to look at some premium rate increases. That doesn't make the Republicans very happy. They, of course, wanted to start from a blank page. This, for the Republicans, is their chance to really publicly say, here's what our ideas are. Of course, there's no one single Republican idea. There are a lot of different Republican bills. A little bit like more publicized version of the exchange that the president had back in Baltimore a few weeks ago at the House Republican Issues Retreat, where I think by all accounts the president seemed to get the better of that exchange. At one point, I think whoever was chairing that group got up and said, "Mr. President, don't you have to leave now?" And the president said, "No, I'm having fun."
Having fun, but will he have fun for 6 hours? This is a long time. This is a sleeves rolled up. It's hard to picture how the political theater goes on for 6 hours without getting either really ugly or sort of somehow productive? Is that possible?
Oh, please. These people talk for a living.
Okay,
I don't think six hours is
but the President of the United States for 6 hours? I don't know.
Well, there's going to be a lot more people in the room than just the President of the United States. I think it's 12 or 14 members of the House and same from the Senate. So it's not just the president.
Is this really about bringing the Republicans on board with something, Julie, or is it about bucking up enough Democrats to move ahead next week, whether or not the GOP's on board?
What I really think, it's about giving Republicans their say and perhaps exposing, from the Democrats' point of view, exposing the Republicans as not really wanting to cooperate and then going ahead and doing, this budget reconciliation, as people have been talking about, going ahead with only the bare majority of votes because they don't have 60 votes in the Senate anymore. So if, either the Republicans can step up and say, we want to participate in this, or they can get up and say, we really don't see any way that there's anything that you're doing that we want to participate in, and that will give the Democrats their chance to say, look, we offered them a chance to come to the table and compromise, and they didn't want to, and that's why we're going ahead with Democrats-only votes. I think that's really what this is about on Thursday.
Let's get a little flavor of the setup here. Here's Robert Gibbs, White House Press Secretary, speaking yesterday about the president's new health care proposal and the sort of build-up to the health care summit later this week, Thursday.
I think it's a starting point in as much as Republicans come to Thursday's meeting with constructive proposals that they're willing to discuss. I think that's the key to having a successful bipartisan approach to this legislation, and that is the willingness for both sides to sit down, discuss common approaches to dealing with skyrocketing costs, to dealing with insurance abuses.
skyrocketing costs, but on everybody's mind, the White House making a lot of that. But starting point sounds a little funny after a year of hashing this thing out. The White House is making a lot, Julie, as you well know, of the California proposed rate increase of up to 39%. And then they look around, Maine, a 23% increase requested this year, Rhode Island, 13-16, Oregon, 20%, Michigan, as much as 56% increase for plans sold in the individual market. These are big hikes.
I think there's a twofold strategy here. One of it is that a lot of people saw these big bills and thought, what's in it for me? All they were hearing was that this is about 30 million people who don't have insurance.
Yeah.
Well, I have insurance, so yeah. This doesn't affect me. All I'm seeing is higher taxes and Medicare cuts. So this is really going after the people. If you do have insurance, look what's happening to you. Your rates are going up. So there really needs to be something in this bill to help the people with insurance. Now, in point of fact, there were already a lot of things in this bill to help people who already had insurance. But this is one way of really highlighting that. The other thing is making the point that if nothing happens, what will happen? If nothing happens, rate increases like this are going to continue to go up. So it's this sort of what's in it for me, the majority of people who are insured, and what's in it if nothing happens. Interestingly, there's a poll out just today from the Kaiser Family Foundation, this monthly tracking poll that they do. When they ask people what should happen next, people are very split. You know, should Congress just take a few things that are popular, go ahead and do what they were doing, put the whole thing aside? It splits, you know, almost in fifths. But if you ask them what will happen if nothing happens, 58% of those polled say they would be either disappointed or angry. So I think having nothing happen would be the worst possible thing for incumbents in general.
Julie, do the Democrats themselves within their own ranks have the numbers to go, if they go to reconciliation, which it only takes 51 votes, so won't be blocked by a filibuster. Do the Democrats have the votes to do that?
Well, it's not clear that they have the votes as of this minute, but I think that obviously, you know, looking at polls like this, it's hard to see how they wouldn't eventually. And by eventually, the reconciliation instructions, the way this process works, are budget instructions from last year's budget resolution. They expire when next year's budget resolution gets passed. That would be in the next couple of months. So it's something they would have to do fairly quickly. So I think that you know, looking at this, I think the votes will be there when they have to be.
Tough talk out of the GOP on this whole front. Here's Republican Congressman Mike Pence of Indiana on Sunday on Meet the Press saying he's very wary of the reconciliation path and the Thursday health care summit.
If we were talking about really starting over with a clean piece of paper, scrapping the bills that have passed the House and the Senate, and also renouncing the abuse of the legislative process known as reconciliation, Republicans are ready to work. But what we can't help but feel like here is the Democrats spell summit S-E-T-U-P. And all this is going to be is some media event used as a preamble to shove through Obamacare 2.0, and we're not going to have any of it.
Obamacare 2.0 and setup, he says, as a spelling for summit. Julie, how do you handicap this? Odds of the Democrats pushing something major through here, or, you know, is it still, I don't know, going to be whittled down to just tiny bragging rights?
Well, at this point, you know, the Republicans have been doing pretty well just saying no. It's hard to see what's in it for the Republicans sitting down and actually trying to get together with the Democrats. If they were willing to do that, then I could see there being a bill. I just haven't seen any sign of them being willing to do that. The fact that they're not means that the Democrats don't have any choice. If there's going to be a bill, they're going to have to go it alone.
Julie Rovner, a health policy correspondent with NPR. It's always great to have you, Julie. Thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Joining us now is Uwe Reinhart, professor of economics and public affairs at Princeton's Woodrow Wilson School for Public and International Affairs, one of the nation's leading healthcare economics experts. Uwe Reinhart, welcome back to On Point. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Tom. Good to be here.
So what do you see going on here? Are we still grinding towards some kind of major healthcare reform? Were we ever? What's your big picture take on where we stand?
Well, I think there's a good chance that ultimately they will use the reconciliation route, because this late in the game to start over is just not realistic. Had they done that last year, maybe this could have been done if the Republicans were actually ever willing to play along. But now it's a little bit late. I think the summit, though, serves a very good purpose, because ideally my view of it would be that the Democrats should be quiet and sit there, because they've had their say for a year, and that it would be like a workshop with a professor, in this case Obama, basically asking the Republicans a set of structured questions, the way you build a health plan. For instance, you would start out with a table, which the president actually has in his 11-page thing he came up with yesterday, and saying, if you're a family making $20,000 to $30,000 family income, how much of that should you be asked to pay towards your own health care, out of pocket or for premiums? Here is the Democratic number. What do you Republicans put there? How much should they? You see, then you would have a start on the ethics. How much protection should the typical American family have?
Do Republicans have numbers they could plug into that chart for a family? I don't know, 20 to 30 or 30 to 40,000 income that would make sense to Americans?
Well, yes. If they couldn't, you would have to say, what's wrong with you guys? Because your viewer who makes $28,000, that's what they would need to know to decide whether to vote for you or not. If you cannot put a number down there, you're not ready to talk health reform. I mean, that's basically would be my view. They should come up with a number. The president has. You could see it in that table, X percent of income and how much should be out of pocket. And the Republicans, if they couldn't come up with a number to fill in a table like that, I had a blog in the New York Times with such a table, then I would say, you're just not even ready. You haven't even thought through what health reform means.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about President Obama's new health care package and the new battle lines in the reform debate, and maybe what happens if there is no reform, with Uwe Reinhardt joining us from Princeton University, one of the president's leading experts on health care economics. We'll hear in a moment from a former health care insurance executive who's speaking out on health insurance. Let's get a listener in right here, Debbie in New Charlotte, North Carolina. Debbie, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm so glad to be on. I've got Blue Cross and Blue Shield. Half of my income goes to pay my premium, and I can't keep this up much longer.
Half of your income, 50% of your income,
goes to pay my Blue Cross and Blue Shield every month, and I can't keep this up. So I'm hoping that there's a house bill that I don't know exactly what it is. That some folks are talking about signing onto a public option. I'd like to see that. I have a daughter with 10 children. She has no insurance whatsoever. She just got done with some surgery. Fortunately, they made little enough that 1 month to cover some of the hospital bills through, I think it's Medicaid for families.
Yeah.
But she's got other bills, and this is a month-to-month basis, and you know, she needs more medical attention and doesn't have any access to it. So we can't keep this up much longer. Here's what upsets me the most. I think they're taking my premium, my expensive premium, and paying people like Senator Baucus, who got millions of dollars from the healthcare industry, and I'm sure a lot of the Republicans, to lobby against it and to put out on the news that they're opposed to it. I just don't understand that at all.
Debbie, we got it. You're paying close attention, and we hear that loud and clear. Uwe Reinhardt, I want to get your reaction to that, but if we could, let's listen to a second to what the president and Mitch McConnell have been saying on this front recently. This was the president over the weekend, right after health insurance companies had proposed. He went right after the proposed hikes in California and Kansas and Maine and Michigan.
Over the past year, as families and small business owners have struggled to pay soaring health care costs, and as millions of Americans lost their coverage, the five largest insurers made record profits of over $12 billion. And as bad as things are today, they'll only get worse if we fail to act. We'll see more and more Americans go without the coverage they need. We'll see exploding premiums and out-of-pocket costs burn through more and more family budgets. We'll see more and more small businesses scale back benefits, drop coverage, or close down because they can't keep up with rising rates.
There's the president's argument, and you can hear the new emphasis on rates. Here's Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell. Fox News Sunday was asked about President Obama's health care plan push.
The American people do not want this bill to pass. And it strikes me as rather arrogant to say, well, we're going to give it to you anyway. and we'll use whatever device is available to achieve that end.
Uwe Reinhardt, what do you think about the president's new focus on rates and rate increases and maybe giving the federal government the power to control those? Is that the way to control health care spending?
Well, I think he's getting into a thicket of controlling health. That's basically price control.
Mm-hmm.
And that turns the industry essentially into a public utility. I don't know why he would burden the healthcare bill with this particular approach. The problem is that healthcare in America is very expensive. It costs twice as much as it costs in Canada per capita.
Mm-hmm.
And some people, as this lady who just called, are simply too poor to be able to afford healthcare for their families out of their own income. And they need help from their fellow citizens who have more money or who are healthier. And that's really the debate. To what extent do I have to, or should I be my brother's and sister's keeper in healthcare in America? All other nations have solved this. They have said, if I'm healthy, I should subsidize the sick. If I'm rich, I should subsidize the poor. Americans have not agreed. When Senator McConnell says the American people don't want this bill, I'm not so sure, because that lady who just called mm-hmm. definitely wants this bill.
You know?
The richer people who have to be asked to the cashier's window, myself included, by the way, some rich people may not want this bill because they don't want to pay anymore.
But do you think that the plan that went so far in the Senate and then ground to a halt and now is kind of back in the president's plan, would that control the cost that you're talking about enough that even if we're sharing the burden, it would work out?
Not in the short run. I have said, I've put it in writing, in the short run, saying the next 5 years, even the Pope couldn't do it. It is very difficult to control costs because I always joke and say there's Alfred E. Newman's equation. Every dollar health spending is someone's healthcare income, including fraud, waste, and abuse. So when you're talking, and the business community, when they're talking cost control, they're really talking controlling the income of doctors and hospitals and pharma and device manufacturers. So you have tremendously powerful lobbyists protecting the incomes of these providers. It'll take at least a 10-year wrestling match between Congress and these interest groups before you can ever have costs under control. What this bill does do, it gives you certain, it develops mm-hmm. or funds the development of certain instruments. For example, a move from fee-for-service to payment by case, which is a much more intelligent way to pay. But that'll take a number of years to implement. A cost-effectiveness analysis, sort of researching what actually works and doesn't work in healthcare.
So do you think the Democrats' plan would put the country on the path to
yes.
getting this worked out or not?
No question that it does that. It puts in place the instruments, the pieces that have yet to be developed to do better cost control. But that is already major progress, that there actually is funding for research to figure out what works and what doesn't work in healthcare.
And if it's not passed or if just small measures are taken, what happens then? What happens if nothing passes?
Well, if nothing passes, obviously well-to-do and healthy people will be better off because they don't have to pay for their sicker and poorer brethren. So they'll be happy. But poor people will have a teaching moment of their life. Many, many Americans who lose their job will find they will also lose their house. They will have to yank a kid out of college. They will be pauperized and chewed up by health care should they get sick. That is what we're really talking about. And there comes a point where I find it hard to have a lot more compassion for them because they cannot afford to sit on the hand. As I tell them, the Tea Party people gave their views. Where was your view? Why didn't you organize similar party in support of this bill, which is there is no question about it. It would help lower income people, people who are worried about losing their job.
You've said that if nothing happens this time, you're expecting, I don't know, some years out, we will eventually end up all the way back to universal coverage, the thing that Republicans most oppose and even Democrats weren't willing to go to.
Some people say that the American people will be desperate enough to do something really drastic that there'll be some political entrepreneur who will marshal the emotions and desperation of the people and go for a single-payer system. That could happen.
Uwe Reinhardt, please stand by. I want to welcome into our conversation from Washington Wendell Potter. He's a former Cigna healthcare executive, worked for 20 years in the industry, 15 for Cigna, was a senior VP, I think, there. He has become a sharp critic of the healthcare industry and has testified before Congress. He's now a senior fellow for healthcare at the Center for Media and Democracy. Wendell Potter, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
What kind of response do you expect from the healthcare industry to the president's new push this week?
Well, the industry will not like it. They could certainly make a lot of money if there is the status quo, if there is no legislation passed. And they don't like the fact that people who don't buy insurance, even though there's a mandate, that they don't have, their penalties will not be very significant. So they're worried about that. But the insurance industry is not the – they use others to do the attack of this kind of legislation. They don't want to be perceived as being the attack dog. So they'll be working through third parties and certainly have the Republicans lined up on their side. So we'll be seeing the Republicans essentially using the Republicans' talking – the industry's talking points, which they've done historically, and I know that because I've been a part of it over many years.
Mm-hmm. And what happens? What's the ripple effect if President Obama's new federal powers to control big rate hikes would come into effect? Could that, like, kind of through a back door, end up controlling health care costs, right? You know, could they then discipline the whole industry to bring costs into line? Or what would the impact likely be?
I think it would help. I think what we have seen in the absence of anything like what the president is proposing is a steady increase in premiums over many years. And the increases that have come to light in California are not new. They just came to light recently. We've been seeing these kinds of rate increases over quite a long time in certain markets, the individual market in particular.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard from many, many people over the course of more than a year about getting notices that their insurance was going up 30% or more. Just last week, I got emails from two of my former colleagues at Cigna who said that they had gotten notices that their premiums were going up 46 and 47%. So this is not new. So I think that this will have some effect. Now, what Professor Reinhardt said earlier that's very significant is that we can't just talk about premiums. We have to take into consideration out-of-pocket cost. The insurance companies are able to offer what appear to be affordable insurance policies with mm-hmm. premiums that appear to be lower or affordable. But you have to look at what you have to pay out of pocket. So they're very adept at shifting more and more of the financial burden of healthcare costs from them and from employers to individuals and to families.
And if something goes wrong, if you've got a problem, you're in trouble.
Absolutely right. And it's not just the poor. Professor Reinhardt made this point. It's increasingly becoming a big problem for people who are in the middle class.
Wendell Potter, stand by. And Uwe Reinhardt, let's go to our listeners. Whit in Nashville. Whit, you're on the air.
Hey. Hey, Tom. How are you doing?
Pretty well. What do you see?
Good. I'm curious about some of the back-end legislation that's already on the books, specifically the McCarran-Ferguson Act in 1945. I'm wondering if there's any talk from anybody in Washington right now about repealing that antitrust exemption and opening up the state markets to more competition, and also how that fits in with the Republicans' offer, the idea of buying insurance across state lines. So, but in particular, antitrust exemption. What's the word on that?
Whit, would you be for it? Would you like to see more competition across state lines? Is that where you're headed?
Yeah, I think in general competition is good. I think it's a tricky subject because, like with the credit cards, you know, you can buy a credit card in any state, but they all locate in what, Delaware or Connecticut,
mm-hmm.
somewhere like that, because the laws are friendly there. So I think that some protections do need to be put in place at the state level, but I think that, you know, competition, you know, generally is good as long as, like Adam Smith said, the competitors act with a moral and ethical framework.
We'll ask Wendell Potter about that. Let's hear just a little bit from Mitt Romney, who was looking at the presidency back in 2012. Last Thursday, he was at the Conservative Political Action Conference, CPAC, a former Republican Massachusetts governor. He was in Washington. He said health care for the uninsured should not come from a big U.S. government plan.
The right way to rein in health care cost is not by applying more government and more controls and making it more like the post office. It's by making it more like a consumer-driven market. The answer for health care is market incentives, not health care by a Godzilla-sized government bureaucracy.
Uwe Reinhardt, Mitt Romney doesn't want to see Godzilla on the loose. What about Republicans talk all the time about letting insurance companies sell policies across state lines? Our caller says, you know, pull off some of the antitrust exemptions here and let's go. What do you say?
Well, those are two separate issues.
Mm-hmm.
The first one is the antitrust exemption in general. There is a theory which is faulty. The president holds it as well, that says the more insurers I have in a state competing with one another, the lower will be the premiums. And I will tell you the opposite will happen. Why?
Mm.
Think of a state of like Massachusetts. You have Health Partners, a huge agglomerate of healthcare delivery mm-hmm. system. It's essentially a monopolist in many ways. Now, if they had one big insurer with whom to deal, they would have some countervailing gorilla on the other side of the table. But if they got 20 little insurers, they can literally dictate rates to them because they can afford to lose an individual insurer and not suffer a lot. So the more insurers you have in the state, the weaker each will be and the higher premiums will be.
What about selling across state lines,
well,
then?
Well, selling across state line is a mirage. What is that in English?
Mirage.
Pardon my French. Yeah. Okay. Now, the idea is that there are two reasons why a policy bought in Utah or in Iowa could be cheaper than one bought in Massachusetts. The first one is they might not regulate the insurance, so there could be a lot of fine print that would limit the insurer's exposure, and the patient will find that out when they're sick in the hospital bed and they're told, oh, this doesn't cover MRIs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that right. kind of... So the consumer protection this caller called about.
Mm-hmm.
But the other one is this. If you look at health spending per capita across the U.S., it varies by a factor of two. Utah is cheap. Massachusetts is twice as expensive per capita. So if a Utah insurance company had to buy health care for a Massachusetts, mm-hmm. for a Boston resident,
mm-hmm.
from Partners, their premium also would be high. Why? Because health care is local.
Mm.
So the reason why a Utah insurer can offer a low premium to Utah residents
mm-hmm.
is because Utah health care from Intermountain Healthcare or these outfits
yep.
is much cheaper.
Wendell Potter, if I may, our caller Whit in Nashville says, but let's do it, and then, you know, it does, he says, depend on the moral fiber of the insurance companies. How strong a pillar is that?
Well, it's not at all strong because there is no such thing. The selling policies across state line, in effect, is already being done by the big national companies, and I work for two of the top five. They're national companies. They do have to abide by the regulations to a certain extent, but not necessarily. A lot of the health plans that are sold are ERISA protected, so we already have it to a certain extent. But what will happen for those that are not enrolled in large group plans, the insurance companies would like to be able to go to a state that has low cost and limited and very little regulation. So mm-hmm. they can set up business there and theoretically sell plans in other states mm-hmm. that would make them exempt from the state regulations in Massachusetts or California mm-hmm. or New York.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about President Obama's new health care package and the new battle lines in the reform debate. Big week, big drama this week as health care reform comes back to center stage in Washington. Uwe Reinhardt from Princeton's Woodrow Wilson School is with us today. And Wendell Potter, former Cigna healthcare executive, is with us as well. Here's Eric Cantor, Republican Congressman of Virginia, at the same Conservative Political Action Conference last week, laying down the GOP line on the upcoming bipartisan healthcare summit.
We Republicans will go to the president and insist that he push the reset button and get serious about offering Americans a positive reform agenda. We will say no to this health care bill because no is what the American people want, and that is our principled opposition that they expect us to pronounce.
A yes and a big no there. You hear the no, the yes, a positive reform agenda. Uwe Reinhardt, do you see, you talked a bit about this earlier, but do you see in the Republican satchel a positive health reform agenda?
They have bills. There's no question. The president, incidentally, admitted openly that he read those bills at the Republican exchange in Baltimore at that meeting.
Well, why not read them? Sure.
No, he read them. Mm-hmm. There is Senate Bill 1099, mm-hmm. Senator Coburn's bill, which is actually not a bad bill at all. It has an extremely controversial way of financing health care. He would tax all employer-provided health insurance, add the premium to your W-2, and you have to pay taxes on it. Hmm. But then he would also give everyone, a family, $5,700 tax credit, refundable. It's just cash to you. So net, many people would actually be better off. Many economists favor this, actually. Mm-hmm. However, getting that past the legislature, because I bet you 10-1, the Chamber of Commerce would oppose it, the National Manufacturing Association would, the unions would. This is a no-starter on the Hill. But conceptually, economists support what Senator Coburn wants. But then the interesting thing is, when you look at his bill on the insurance reorganization side, reorganizing the market for individual insurance is really not much different from what's in the Obama bill. I mean, so it seems to me they could have worked together. Now, there are other bills in the House. Congressman Price, House H.R. 3400, I think it is. Mm-hmm. That is such a minimal bill that I really wouldn't propose it for anything. Among others, he doesn't really have any financing in it. He just says, we'll take it out of discretionary income. I don't think, to me, that's good enough. But then there is a House H.R., I think it's 4032.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And that's a bill that is a more composite bill, a little larger. But again, that covers only 3 million, I think, of the uninsured now. So it doesn't do very much. It doesn't help a lot of people.
Wendell Potter, do you see something to talk about on Thursday? Could you imagine somehow busting through the Kabuki theater here and getting to a real conversation? Is there ground for a real exchange that could move toward some kind of big solution or not?
No, I don't think so. I think what you will see is a contest of messaging and communications, and I think that the Democrats need to demonstrate that they can play that game as well as Republicans. Republicans made it clear even before there was any kind of legislation that appeared in either the House or the Senate that was going to be seriously considered, that they would call it a government takeover of the health care system. So they were planning that messaging strategy for a long time and had planned to say no to whatever the Democrats came up with. And just shortly before the Senate voted on its bill, Senator Claire McCaskill of Missouri was asked, well, what happened? Why has this bill taken the shape it has? Why does it not include a public option that there was such support for at one point among Democrats? And she said, we lost the messaging battle. And that's exactly what happened. And I think the president, if he has any hope of trying to push this legislation through, will have to demonstrate that he is a communicator and that he can remind people why we're having this debate in the first place, what the problems are, and why the bill that he's proposing is better than what the Republicans are suggesting.
But does he have a good pony to ride with this proposal, Wendell? I mean, I've got a message here from Facebook from Joe. He says, the proposals to cap profits and executive earnings at insurers are proposals that play perfectly into the caricature of President Obama as socialist that the GOP's peddling. This is not good political play for White House. What do you say, Wendell?
Well, I don't think his character. I think that when we look at what has happened over the years in terms of rate increases, we see that if he can make the point that the health insurance industry has not been adequately regulated at the state and certainly not the federal level. This is why we've got some of the problems we have now. And regulation can be an important component of reform and needs to be.
Let's go to Omaha, Nebraska, and Linda. Linda, you're on the air.
Yes, I am. Thanks, Tom.
Hi.
I was listening to the radio. The guy was talking about Cigna insurance.
Yes.
I have Cigna insurance. I am so disappointed with that insurance.
Why?
I need to, because I made dental appointment. I need dentures, right? Because I'm diabetic.
Yep.
And so it's going to cost me $7,000 to get my mouth fixed. That's to get 18 teeth pulled and to get my dentures paid. Dentures made.
Mm-hmm.
And Cigna's only paying $1,000. They only allow $1,000 a year.
So
they went up on my premium. I don't mind paying more. But I feel, as a consumer, I feel I should have been warned of what I'm to pay and what they're paying.
And when you turn around and actually need it, there's not much there for you. And we hear that, Linda. We heard Uwe warning of that earlier. Thank you for your call, and good luck with it. Linda, what do you think of your Senator Ben Nelson's work out there to get the special sweet deal for Nebraska? That would go away with President Obama's new plan. Is that all right with you?
No, it's not. No, it's not. And I just want to say, Tom, you know, the bickering need to stop between Republican and Democrats. I don't care what party you are. The thing of it is, we Americans, no one is going to be healthy if we don't do something and do something soon about the health, the insurance issue that is going on now.
Yep.
And the thing of it is, yes, there should be some type of plan to cover every American, to make sure that every American has access to insurance and health benefits. Also, along with that should be programs to keep people healthy. Instead of riding two blocks to a store, walk two blocks to a store. You know, there's got to be something else besides just health care reform. Let's get people in the mind of thinking, hey, what did we do before transportation got so
easy,
plentiful?
Yeah, Linda, I think you're right on the money there, and I appreciate your call. Let me get one more right here from Edisto Island, South Carolina. Diane, you're on.
Hey, Tom, thank you for this program.
Mm-hmm.
My comment is that my husband passed away 3 years ago from cancer.
Sorry.
He had no health insurance because he had a lymphoma when he was 31 years old. He could not, nobody would insure him. And so we paid at least $100,000 out of pocket and for his care.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm paying, and he died.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm paying $375 a month with a $5,000 deductible through Blue Cross Blue Shield. I'm healthy. I never had to use it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's totally, this is absurd that people have to go through this in this country, because if my husband hadn't gotten his Social Security, which took us 2 years and a lawyer to get for him because he was permanently disabled, if we hadn't gotten that Medicare, we would have lost our home, everything we owned. And we, luckily, we had some inheritance, which went for his medical bills, which I had to pay for years. And every time we'd go in, people would threaten us. Well, if you don't pay, we're going to do this and that to you.
Yeah.
And it's unbelievable in this country that, you know, there's so many people without health care. It should be a right and not a privilege for the few wealthy. And there's so many. This is the richest country in the world, and the most affluent, and those that don't want this for people that are less fortunate are being selfish and greedy. And I really just something has to be done. I think we need a public option or something that will help those that are less fortunate.
Diane, we hear it loud and clear, and I'm sorry about your husband and all that trouble there, but I appreciate your call today. Wendell Potter, how do you think insurance company executives, and you are one yourself, will hear stories like those we're hearing today from pretty ordinary Americans up against some pretty tough health care problems?
The problem is they avoid hearing them, and I know that from having been, like you said, an executive and making sure that I wasn't too close to those kinds of stories. If you are, like it did ultimately to me, it's hard to stay in those jobs. You in those when you're a top executive, you deal in numbers. You deal in how many millions of members you have, or how many millions or billions of dollars you're taking in revenue, and how your profit margin is going to be. That's what happens in the executive suites all too often. You're insulated from the real world. You know, and talking about just referring to the woman from Nebraska who was talking about her inability really to get the dental care that she needs. One of the things that is happening, it's not just Cigna, which is she's enrolled in that plan, it's it's in many plans, and it's related to what I was talking about before. The companies are cutting back on benefits as they are raising premiums, shifting more and more of the cost to consumers. And this is another reason why we so desperately need reform. In the industry, it's called benefit buy-downs, and it happens every single month, every single year. More and more people are paying more for their coverage and getting less for it.
Uwe Reinhardt, where is all this headed? America clearly has the tolerance to live with, what has it been, like 50 million people uninsured and many more underinsured. That's not pretty, but the country has proven it's willing morally to live with that. But if we've got these benefit buy-downs, you know, higher premiums, less coverage, you say the affluent can still afford it, but it's kind of climbing up the income ladder, the problems here.
Well, it is a problem, and so far we've not dealt with it because the bulk of Americans have insurance from the employer and are happy with it, and are just not worried about these other people whom they don't identify with. But if the country economy doesn't improve quickly, and it won't, I think, and you will find more and more small businesses dropping insurance because these premiums go up double-digit, and other people laying off what they call downsizing, and all of a sudden middle-class managers find themselves without insurance and diabetes, they'll rediscover. And the way I always put it, Americans keep screaming, we want government out of our lives. Well, then you will learn what it is not to have government in your life, that you're totally on your own, that you lose everything you have. Like this lady said, $100,000. And so Americans have a wonderful thing. It's called democracy. If they don't like this, they should vote for political candidates who promise to help them. And this president did, and he's trying to do that, and we shall see if he gets it through the Congress. I personally believe that demonizing either hospitals or insurance companies, et cetera, is an unhappy sideshow. I don't think that's really the issue. The reason I believe that WellPoint raised those rates, I don't think those rate hikes go into WellPoint profits, and I wonder if Wendell even thinks about it. They probably did experience actuarially an increase in net, what they call trend, cost trend, and that can't be avoided. The hospitals bill more. The producers of supplies bill more, and ultimately an insurance company takes whatever it is charged by the providers of health care, adds a profit margin, and has, of course, its administrative costs. But the idea that you had 39% premium increases, and that then means WellPoint's profits rise 39%, I don't think so.
Wendell, how do you look at that? I mean, on the one hand, it makes it easy to look at it as insurance companies gouging. Then you just stop the gouging and it's solved. But if it's really about the revenue and incomes of hospitals and doctors and nurses and all the whole system, that's harder to wrestle with. How do you see it?
Well, it is harder to wrestle with, but it is an issue. And Professor Reinhardt is correct. The 39% increase in the individual policies does not mean that WellPoint will make a 39% profit on that business, or its overall profit will be that. But it's a for-profit company, and investors expect that every product line of those for-profit companies be profitable, and the executives are under the gun to demonstrate that they are profitable and to do whatever they can is or whatever is necessary or they can get away with to make sure that they are. One of the things that's lost in this is that the insurance companies are actually creating a problem that didn't exist many years ago by actually purging a lot of their books of business, the small businesses in particular that are customers of these companies, their rates are going up significantly. If someone who's an employee of a small business gets sick, then that small business is likely to see its rates go up so high that many of them drop coverage.
And that's what they want when you say purging. They want them
exactly.
To
drop. They want to get rid of those customers. And that means that those people who are losing their coverage, about the only option they have is to get coverage in the individual market. And it is an expensive place to get coverage. So the insurance companies are actually creating a problem that we need to deal with by that. And this legislation would address some of that.
In a word, what do you think of the odds of something big still happening? It seems so last ditch, last minute here. Do you think it could turn around and something still happen or not?
I do, because I think, as Julie Rovner said at the top of the show, I think that the Democrats feel that they absolutely have to have something passed. And I think that Senator McConnell and the other Republicans are being disingenuous by saying that the American public doesn't want this. They do expect reform. What has happened, because this debate has gone on so long, is that Republicans have been able to get the advantage in the messaging and scare people away from reform.
Uwe Reinhardt, in a word, do you think there's a chance of passage here, or it's done, it's over?
Well, I listened to Julie Rovner, one of the best in the business.
Yep.
I think she's right. This probably will move through reconciliation. And she said, I think the votes will be there. So I think they will pass something. Because if they don't, it's even worse for the Democratic Party.
We shall see, and soon. Uwe Reinhardt, Wendell Potter, thank you very much to each of you. It's been great having you.
Thank you.
Listeners, thanks for joining us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.